Buying a house from an owner in default. Buying homes from owners in foreclosure is not as simple as it seems on late-night TV. Your first challenge is finding owners, one, who are behind in their payments, two, who own a house that you want, and three, who will agree to sell. Finding them is not difficult. Getting them to make a good decision, to sell to you, can be. They did not get into financial trouble by making good decisions. Another challenge is dealing with the lenders. In this era of megabanks, it's a challenge to find the right person to talk to. Many loans in default are owed to lenders who have made higher-risk second mortgage loans. These lenders often are eager to talk because they are in a risky position. Some of these lenders are private individuals who are just trying to recover their capital. A third challenge is finding the money to fund these purchases. Foreclosure buying can require a lot of cash. Lenders often will want cash for their positions. Investors who will loan you money at decent rates and will co-invest in longer-term deals are a good source, along with home equity loans and lines of credit. Dealing with the lenders. When borrowers quit making their loan payments, the lender begins writing letters trying to inspire them to pay. Understand that lenders do not want the real estate. They want their money back. While some lenders do make a profit when they foreclose, many more lose money. Foreclosures are an expensive distraction from their main source of profits, lending money. A junior lender, one who has made a second, third, or even fourth position behind other loans, is taking a bigger risk and often will be more aggressive and more creative in collecting her money. Many first mortgages are insured for non-payment through the Federal Housing Administration, FHA, or Mortgage Guarantee Insurance Corporation, MGIC, or are guaranteed by the Veterans Administration, VA. So the lender's risk is lower. Second mortgage lenders rarely have insurance, so they are more willing to accept a partial payment when a loan is in default. Solving the delinquent owner's biggest problem. To homeowners facing foreclosure, ruined credit and loss of equity are both small problems compared with having to move their family out of their home. They are facing a move into a rental house in a neighborhood that probably is far less desirable than their current one. An owner who has to move because of a foreclosure is no catch as a tenant and may have to accept the dregs of the rental market. Obviously, if an owner did not pay the lender, he may not pay the rent either. You can solve this one big problem, but you must solve it carefully or you can become the victim. If you buy a house in foreclosure and then rent it back to the owners, there are three requirements. 1. Make sure that the sellers understand what they are doing. Because they are not moving, they may think that they are borrowing money, not selling their home. Be clear in what you say and specific in what you write down. Document clearly that this is a sale, not a loan. In a separate document, agree to rent the former owners the house. 2. Something has to change before renting to the sellers makes sense, either the house they are in or another rental you have. Has their income increased or their expenses decreased? How much rent can they afford to pay? They proved that they cannot afford the current house payments. How much can they afford? 3. Always build in a financial incentive for the sellers to pay the rent on time and then at some point to move out of the house and leave it in good condition. You want them to be able to afford the rent and then to leave you a house in good condition when they leave. They will be more likely to do these things if they are paid to do them. Build into your offer a below-market rent if they pay on time and also more money in the form of a large security deposit when they move out if they leave the house clean and in good repair. Buying a house and renting it back to an owner who is behind on his payments. Many homeowners who are behind on their payments like their house and don't want to move. Moving is expensive and not a lot of fun. You can buy a house using this strategy, but you must use a great deal of caution and common sense. Remember, if the homeowner is not making payments to the lender, you have to structure a deal that she can afford or she won't make payments to you either. Important note, some states have laws designed to protect sellers who are behind in their payments. These laws may address buying a house from a seller who is behind in his payments and then renting it back to him. Other states allow the seller to back out of the contract within a certain period of time. Understand your state laws that deal with foreclosures before entering into any agreement with sellers who are behind in their payments. Negotiating a purchase and lease. If the sellers have equity in their house, you can let them use that equity to pay rent on either their own house or another. For example, if their house is worth between $180,000 and $200,000, always give yourself a range of prices, and their loan balance with back payments is $120,000, then they have enough equity that you can buy and give them bargain rent. Retail value of house, clean and in good condition, $180,000 to $200,000. Wholesale value of house in foreclosure, $140,000 to $160,000. Balance on loan, including back payments and costs, $120,000. Their equity, $20,000. The owner's payments today that they cannot afford, with taxes and insurance, are $1,250 a month. During your initial conversation, ask the owners what their house would rent for. They often have a high opinion of what their house is worth and what it will rent for. If during your negotiation you determine that they want to stay in their house, you can use their rent estimate as a starting point. If they guessed low or you are uncertain of the market rent, then you need to gather comparable market rent information to establish a rent. In the preceding example of a house with a wholesale value of $140,000, the market rent may be between $1,200 and $1,400 a month. Next, it is important to determine the amount of rent that the owners can comfortably afford to pay. Ask them what they can afford. Ask them how much income they have. They should pay around one-third of their income in rent. Do not rent them the house at a rent higher than one-third of their income. Next, establish the amount of security deposit that gives them enough incentive to give you the house in good condition. The amount will depend on the value and condition of the house and the risk that you are taking by renting them the house. Always make the deposit greater than a month's rent. If the house is in good condition, use several months' rent. Some states have laws that set a maximum security deposit. Learn your state law. It will be under the landlord-tenant heading in your state statutes. By keeping the rent low and the deposit high, you give the owners a large financial incentive to stay in the house and to give it back in good condition. If they leave early, you can rent the house to another tenant for more rent. Assume that the owners in this example have lost their jobs but have now found new, lower-paying jobs. Their monthly income has dropped from $5,000 to $3,000. With this income, they can afford to pay about 33% or about $1,000 a month in rent. Their greatest problem is finding affordable housing until they can get back on their feet. Moving is expensive. If you let them rent back their own home, you have saved them a lot of hard work and expense, not to mention the trauma of moving from their nice home into a neighborhood that they can currently afford. Offer to rent them the house for 1 year at the bargain price of $900 a month, a $500 monthly discount from the high end of the market rent of $1,400. Understand that $1,400 is retail rent. If you rented to another tenant today, you would be more likely to collect around $1,300 a month. Fair market rent, $1,400. Rent to the previous owner, $900. Monthly saving to them, $500. If you rent to them for 12 months at this $500 discount, they would save $6,000. In addition, you could give them a credit of $4,000 as the security deposit, which you would refund at the end of the 12 months if they turn over the house clean and in good condition. Giving this large a credit as a security deposit is important. You need to give them a significant incentive to keep the house in good condition, leave it clean, and leave on time. Calculating the benefit of the lease to them is as follows. Discounted rent, 12 months times $500, $6,000. Security deposit, $4,000. Total benefit, if they stay 12 months, $10,000. If they want to extend the lease and continue living in the house as tenants, then you can raise the rent to closer to a market rate. I have rented back to sellers for as long as 5 years at a reduced rate. You can build in an increase each year. Using the preceding house with a market rent of between $1,200 and $1,400 today, a 5-year monthly rent schedule could look like this. Year 1, $900. Year 2, $1,200. Year 3, $1,300. Year 4, $1,400. Year 5, $1,500. By the time you reach the 5th year, you may be at market rent. Having a tenant stay in the house 5 years eliminates all vacancy costs, advertising costs, and a lot of maintenance expense. It can be a good deal for both you and the tenant. When you purchase a house using this technique, you often can make a deal that other buyers cannot make. You are offering a solution to the homeowner's biggest problem, where to live. In addition, you are saving them from a foreclosure, helping their credit. Before you make the offer, calculate your potential profit and make sure that the profit you will make will be fair for the amount of money and risk you are taking. In the preceding example, you are buying a house worth at least $140,000 for a total price of $130,000, the loan balance of $120,000, the rent loss of $6,000, and the security deposit of $4,000. You may be able to buy this house with little or no down payment depending on your ability to negotiate with the lender. If so, your risk is relatively low, and your profit potential when the former owners move out in a year should be a minimum of $10,000 and hopefully more. Market value of house, $180,000 to $200,000. Existing loan balance, $120,000. Loss on rent, $350 times 12 months, $4,200. $1,250 loan payments less $900 rent. Security deposit, $4,000. Total, $128,200. Your purchase price, $128,200. Potential profit, $50,000+. When negotiating with lenders, ask for more than you expect. Before you take title to a property, contact the lender. You need to talk with a high-ranking employee who has the authority to renegotiate the terms of the loan. This may be the president of a small bank, the senior mortgage officer of a mid-sized bank, or the person in charge of the department in a large bank that handles delinquent loans. You often can get the name and number of the appropriate person from correspondence sent to the homeowners by the lender after they fall behind in their payments. You often will begin with a lower-level employee and have to ask to speak with the supervisor. Keep asking until you get to a decision maker. Remember, you are dealing with employees in a big institution. It's not their money, but a bad loan is their problem. You can be the solution to that problem. If the lender is a community bank, go right to the president. She will be the decision maker, and it is likely that some of what's owed is her money. Once you are speaking to the right person, you need to have a plan. You can ask for many things that would benefit you. For example, a lower interest rate, a lower monthly payment, and the forgiveness of the back payments and penalties. If they won't forgive the back payments and penalties, ask them to add the amount of any delinquent payments to the loan. Often, you can negotiate that the bank will let you sell the house to a new buyer who can assume the loan without qualifying. Ask for a lot. It will work in your favor because the lender will see you as a professional buyer, not an amateur. offer to bank when buying a second in default. If an institution owns the second mortgage or trust deed in default, see if it would be willing to lend you enough to pay off the first loan and add it to the second mortgage. That lender then would have a first mortgage in the amount of both the first and second mortgages. House value $200,000. Second mortgage in default $50,000. Existing first mortgage $100,000. The bank with the second agrees to make a new first loan in the amount of $150,000 that would replace both existing loans. Negotiate aggressively on the interest rate and terms so you will have cash flow immediately from the rents that you collect. You may agree to a shorter term loan, say 10 years, to get a lower rate. If you need money to fix up or remodel the house, ask the lender to lend it to you and add it to the loan. If it's a great deal for you, but the lender is unwilling, offer to pay down the existing loan by $10,000. You could also give the lender a second mortgage on another house that you own with more equity. Buying at a foreclosure auction. This is the most dangerous but potentially lucrative time to buy a property. Both lenders' auctions and municipal auctions to collect back taxes are opportunities to buy at steep discounts, but the terms are all cash, often due the day of the sale, and you might not have much information about the property. A house sold at a tax or foreclosure auction may be occupied. If owners are losing their home or a tenant losing his rental, whoever is about to be evicted will not be happy. I've seen houses significantly destroyed by owners losing them. Tenants are unlikely to clean and paint on their way out since they will not be getting their deposit back. It can take more money to repair the house than it is worth. If you ever bid on a house in foreclosure, meet the occupants and offer to pay them to leave the house in good condition if you buy it. If you can agree on a reasonable number and you are the winning bidder at the sale, then you might get the house in good condition. If you are not the winning bidder, find out who is and go talk with them. They may be willing to sell to you for a quick profit, and you might be able to buy the house at a price that you like. An empty house is much safer to buy. Just because it is empty today is no guarantee that someone won't move in tonight. Empty houses in foreclosure often attract squatters who will not improve the house. Buying from a lender that has foreclosed. A much safer time to buy is after the bank has foreclosed, evicted the occupants, and taken possession. The house may need a lot of work, but you have a good idea of how much. I have bought several bank-owned properties that were in good condition. That is the best house to buy because you can rent it immediately. Banks will often get multiple offers on REO, real estate-owned property. You increase your chances of buying by 1. Offering all cash and a fast closing. Generally, 10 days is acceptable. 2. Offer to accept the property in its as-is condition subject to your inspection. Your inspection period can run up to the date of closing if it's only 10 days. Banks can and do finance the sale of their foreclosures, but if the price is more important, make a cash offer. See Chapter 8 for ideas on financing. Buying foreclosures takes knowledge and experience. There are a lot of highly skilled professional foreclosure buyers. This group includes attorneys and others with knowledge of the system and the market. They are your competition. Buying foreclosures successfully requires experience, knowledge, and good legal advice. In a rising interest rate market, there are generally more foreclosures and a good deal of opportunity. Although tremendous opportunities are available, be careful not to buy beyond your ability to manage and handle the cash flow. Let this be the beginning of your education, because there is much more to learn. If you are a beginning investor, get good legal advice before bidding at a foreclosure sale or entering into a contract to buy a property from owners who are behind on their payments. The laws that govern the sale of foreclosures change. Check them before you buy. Chapter 17. Attracting and Training Long-Term Low-Maintenance Tenants. What qualities are you looking for in a good tenant? When I ask investors in my seminar this question, here are the responses I get. 1. A tenant who pays on time. 2. A tenant who takes care of the property. 3. A tenant who stays forever. 4. A tenant who never calls. Now turn the question around. What is a good tenant, one who will do the preceding, looking for in a house and in a landlord? You probably have rented a house or an apartment. What was important to you as a renter? Here is a partial list of what good tenants tell me they are looking for. 1. A house in a safe neighborhood. 2. A house big enough to hold all our stuff. 3. A house that is clean and in good repair. 4. A landlord who will maintain the property. 5. Fair rent. 6. Fair rent raises. 7. Privacy. 8. A house that is not for sale. Is there anything on this list that you would find difficult to provide? The secret of getting the best tenants in your town. The best tenants have their choice of houses to rent because every landlord with a vacancy would love to meet them. The secret to attracting the best tenants in your town is simple. Most of the features listed here were covered in Chapter 2. This is no accident. Buy a house that will attract a superior tenant. Buy a well-designed house in a good neighborhood. Good neighbors are what everyone wants, and tenants are no exception. If the neighbors on both sides and across the street take good care of their property and are good neighbors, then you can attract a tenant who values a good neighbor. Avoid neighborhoods full of tenants. Most landlords do not maintain property well or manage tenants well, so you can spot the tenant-occupied houses. Buy in owner-occupied neighborhoods and then keep your house looking as good as the neighbors' houses. Avoid houses with strange layouts. Some houses have been remodeled poorly, so you have to walk through one bedroom to get to another bedroom. These houses are hard to rent and hard to sell. Use your common sense to avoid houses that do not have a standard layout. You can buy them cheap, but in the long run you will make less money. Avoid houses on busy streets and on corner lots, and buy the best location you can afford. The best located houses will appreciate the most and be easiest to rent. Buy a house with room for lots of stuff. Buy a house that is big enough for a family of 4 or 5 people to live in comfortably. Smaller families still appreciate the extra space, and it gives them room for guests or new additions. Houses with 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms and a garage or a basement are more rentable than a smaller home. You want to rent to a tenant who owns a bunch of stuff and does not find moving fun. A yard that is fenced or that can be fenced is a great asset. Most of my tenants have kids or pets or both. One reason they need a house instead of an apartment is the kids and pets. Kids and pets increase the chances that the renters will stay a long time. Understanding the laws that apply to landlording. There are local, state, and federal laws that affect you as a landlord. Your local laws, such as zoning regulations, determine what you can do with the property. A house zoned single-family residential may not be used to house a business. Other local laws may require you to maintain your property. Local code enforcement departments generally enforce these laws. Your state has laws that regulate the relationships between landlords and tenants. Get a copy of your state's landlord-tenant statute that applies to single-family rentals. Your state statutes will be available in your public library, and now they are often available online. It is almost certain that there are separate statute sections that apply to multifamily, mobile home, and commercial rentals. Read the part of the law that deals with single-family tenancies carefully. Learn what maintenance you are required to provide and what your tenant is required to do. Know how large a security deposit you can charge, where you have to hold it, and how you handle the return of the deposit when a tenant moves out of the house. Learn what steps you need to take if a tenant refuses to pay their rent. Hopefully, you will not use this information often. In renting to hundreds of tenants, I have had to evict only 6 tenants. More of my tenants have had problems, but by quickly addressing those problems, I avoided using the court system to evict. If you have a problem with a tenant, your recourse will be in your local courts, and the process is guided by your state statutes. By understanding and complying with your state statutes, you can avoid going to court, except in cases where the tenants refuse to negotiate. Federal fair housing anti-discrimination laws apply to renting and selling houses. A copy can be found online by searching for the Fair Housing Act or, again, in your public library. Read the Fair Housing Act to learn how it affects you as a residential landlord. It prohibits discrimination in the sale or rental of a house based on race, color, religion, sex, familial status, or national origin, and explains your obligations if you rent to someone with a significant handicap. The steps in renting a house. Here are the steps that you take to attract, select, and rent to a good tenant. 1. Get the property clean and in good repair. Always get a house in good condition before you rent it. It's a mistake to rent a dirty house or one that needs work. When you do, you will probably get a dirty tenant who will leave you with an even dirtier house that needs even more work. Tenants may promise to do work or clean, but they rarely do it. How much does it cost to have a house professionally cleaned in your town? Typically, it is the equivalent of only a few days' rent. Who makes the decision to rent a house? If you rent to a couple, the woman typically will be the decision maker, and women prefer a clean house, because they know who will have to clean it. Spend the money to clean the whole house: windows, screens, closets, and cabinets. Touch up or paint the house as needed. Spruce up the yard and make sure that the house looks good from the street. A house may be beautiful inside, but if it's a dog from the street, no one is going to stop to look in the windows. If a house rents for $1,500 a month, it costs you about $50 a day to let it sit empty. In addition, you probably are spending money on utilities and taking the time to keep the grass cut and talking to prospective tenants. Anticipate vacancies and move fast to clean and spruce up your property. If you can rent a house in a week instead of a month because you paid a house cleaner and a painter a little extra to work over the weekend, you are way ahead of the person who takes several weeks to paint and clean the house himself. 2. Introduce yourself to the neighbors. Knowing the neighbors keeps out bad tenants. When I buy a house that I intend to rent, I always introduce myself to the neighbors and give them my name and phone number. I tell them that if a tenant causes them any kind of problem, I want to hear from them and that I will do everything I can to take care of it. I want my tenants to be good neighbors, and I want good neighbors that are there to stay. I then tell my prospective tenants that I know the neighbors and that they keep an eye on the house for me. A prospective tenant who is planning on sneaking several more roommates in or using the house for a business or an illegal purpose will not want to rent a house that is so well monitored. Such a person will leave and rent a different house. 3. Set the rent and the deposit. Before you begin to rent a house, write down the rent, the deposit, and the amount of income that a tenant would need to afford your house. Typically, a tenant can afford to pay between 30% and 40% of her income as rent. If they have other obligations, car payments, and so on, they may need more income. Some tenants will want to rent a house that they cannot afford. It is up to you to use good judgment and not allow potential tenants to obligate themselves to too much rent. Setting the rent and deposit is not an exact science, and you can give yourself a range rather than an absolute number for a tenant's income. Charge a security deposit that is an amount greater than a month's rent. If it is the same as a month's rent, tenants will assume that they can use it to pay the last month's rent. The only money that helps you as a landlord is money you have left after the tenant moves out. The bigger the security deposit you have, the more the tenant will want it back, and the more cooperative that tenant will be. Research your state tenant and landlord laws to see if there are restrictions on the amount of the security deposit you can charge. Most states allow a deposit of at least a month and a half's rent, and many allow 2 months' rent. While you are better off with the biggest deposit you can charge, tenants will only pay so much. They will pay a larger deposit to get a better house at a fair rent. A bigger deposit will eliminate many financially marginal tenants. By charging a larger deposit, at least a month and a half's rent, you can rent to a tenant who is financially stronger and is smart enough to pay a little higher deposit to get a better house. Monthly rent, $750. Tenant's monthly income range, $1,875 to $2,500. Security deposit, $1,125 to $1,500. Monthly rent, $1,000. Tenant's monthly income range, $2,500 to $3,750. Security deposit, $1,500 to $2,000. Monthly rent, $1,500. Tenant's monthly income range, $3,750 to $5,000. Security deposit, $2,250 to $3,000. Monthly rent, $2,000. Tenant's monthly income range, $5,000 to $6,000. Security deposit, $3,000 to $4,000. Monthly rent, $2,500. Tenant's monthly income range, $6,000 to $7,500. Security deposit, $4,500 to $5,500. The figures shown here are just for illustration, and you should adjust your criteria based on your market and for other financial obligations that the tenants may have. Look at both the quantity and quality of the income. Some tenants make too much money to rent your house. They can afford it easily, but they also can afford to buy, and typically they will buy, and will only rent the house for a short time. The quality of a tenant's income with a new job or working in a new field is lower than a tenant with a longer-term job. Commission income is a lower quality than one paid by the hour or on salary. Ask potential tenants where they work and how long they have worked there. Ask for both their income and their immediate supervisor's name and phone number. Verify what they tell you. 4. When the rental market is soft, lower your rent. Not your standards. When the rental market is soft, there are many houses for rent and not many qualified tenants to rent them, rather than lowering your standards, reduce your rent to attract a quality tenant who recognizes a bargain. There are always some good tenants looking for a house. To attract them, you need a good house in a good neighborhood that is attractively priced. When you calculate the cost of letting your house sit empty for a month, it is a far better strategy to price your house on the low side of the market to begin with and to attract the best available tenant immediately rather than pricing it higher and waiting longer for a qualified tenant. If a house rents for $1,400 a month and sits empty for a month before you rent it, it costs you $1,400 plus the cost of advertising and maintaining the house. Renting it the first week at $1,300 a month will make you more money and take less of your time. When you have an empty house, in addition to advertising and maintaining it, you have to answer the phone and interview prospective tenants. This takes a lot of your time. Otherwise, you could use the time to find another good deal. Try to reduce the rent, not the deposit. Although the two move together, you don't want to rent to someone who cannot afford your house. The best test of this is whether the potential tenants have money in the bank today. 5. Place a sign on the property. You get better qualified tenants with a sign. You get people who want to rent in that neighborhood and maybe on that street because they have friends or family in the area. Use a good-looking sign with your phone number in larger numbers. Put an information sheet showing the price and features of the house in a front window. Leave the blinds and drapes open so that prospective tenants can see the interior. Put a message on your voicemail stating the rent and deposit and availability and if pets are welcome. 6. Advertise on the internet and, if necessary, in the newspaper. The internet is a constantly evolving way to attract potential tenants. Different sites and technology provide ways to reach the world. The downside is that you may get 50 or more responses, and replying to 50 people with questions takes a lot of time. I've learned to use email to sort the better prospects. By asking them questions via email, I avoid trying to reach them by phone and the time that that would take. Questions like, how long do you want to rent for? How many people will live in the house, and what pets do you own, can allow you to communicate with them quicker, and you'll have a written record of their responses. Whether you advertise online or in the paper, clarify these important points: the rent, the cost to move in, the location, the size, and the condition of the property. Pictures sell. Study professional pictures of houses for sale and then mimic them. 7. Notify the neighbors. Send the neighbors a short letter or postcard and tell them the rent amount in case they have friends looking for a place to live. 8. Arrange for lawn care during vacancy. Keep the outside looking good. Try to use a neighborhood kid or local service to mow, and the workers will also keep an eye on the house for you. 9. Answer your email and phone. Some landlords use a dedicated cell phone for calls on ads. If you cannot answer it, put recorded information about the house and about how prospective tenants can contact you either during office hours or at an open house that you have scheduled. 10. Showing the property. Rather than meeting prospective tenants at the house, tell them to drive by the house, look in the windows if it is vacant, and then to give you a call back if they want to see the inside. If they have seen the outside and want the house, ask them to meet you to fill out an application and to leave a deposit. I currently ask for a $100 deposit that I will refund if I don't rent to them, or that I will apply to the rent if I do rent to them. After you have met them and they have filled out an application and you like them, then you can meet them at the house or give them a key to the house to inspect it. If you give them a key, have them sign a receipt that says, "We agree not to occupy the house, to lock the house when we leave, that no one will smoke in the property, and that we will turn off any lights, water, etc. before leaving, that we will return the key within blank hours, and we are responsible for any damage to the house." Don't worry about theft. If someone is going to steal something out of your house, they are not going to fill out an application first. They will just break into the house. 11. Holding open houses. An alternative is to hold an open house at the rental house at a certain time and invite all who are interested to meet you there. Pick a time that will work for most tenants. Between 4:30 and 6 p.m. is a good time for most. You can do this once a week or more often depending on the number of calls you get and how eager you are to rent the house. Put a note in the window of the house with the time and date. Bring applications and rental agreements with you. Come prepared to rent the house. 12. Have the prospective tenant fill out an application. Once prospective tenants have seen a house and want it, have them fill out a rental application. Check with your local investors association or apartment owners association for locally used forms and rental contracts. Another source may be a local real estate attorney who hands out free forms to drum up business. Many forms are available online. Professional Publishing LLC has both applications and residential rental contracts at a reasonable cost. If your application does not ask how long the prospective tenants intend to stay, you ask them without giving them clues to the answer that you want. The right answer is the rest of our lives, but most tenants say 1 or 2 years. Obviously, 2 years is a better answer. I want people who will unpack and stay a while. The longer they stay, the more money they make for me. Ask prospective tenants for an application fee with their application. I ask for $100, which I refund if I refuse to rent them the house, or apply to a security deposit if I rent to them. State laws vary on how much you can charge for application fees and security deposits. Get a copy of your state landlord-tenant statute and become knowledgeable about the sections that deal with residential leases. 13. check prospective tenant's references. Call the prospective tenant's employer to confirm employment and income, and call their current and immediate past landlords to ask whether they would rent to these tenants again. To make sure that you are really talking to the right person, confirm the facts that the tenants gave you. For example, the tenants may have stated that they had paid $1,000 a month rent and had lived in the previous property 3 years. Ask the landlord the amount of rent and how long the tenants have lived there. If it's just a friend of the tenant instead of the landlord, he may not know the answers. 14. Interview the tenants. Before you agree to rent prospective tenants a house, you want to spend some time with them and interview them. You want them to see you as a competent landlord who has rules and wants to rent his house to tenants who will take care of the house and be good neighbors. Part of the interview is just getting to know them. Ask where they are from, where they went to school, how many kids they have, where their family lives, what activities their kids are involved in, why they like this house in this neighborhood, and so on. Invite the entire family to the interview so that you can see how the parents interact with the kids. Well-adjusted kids squirm and want their parents' attention. The way in which the parents handle their children shows you how the family interacts. Always ask the kids, not the parents, what pets they have. Sometimes parents forget to list the pets on the application. The kids will tell you all about their pets. This small talk will allow you to learn much more than what the prospective tenants listed on the application. You want to rent to real people who can answer these normal questions comfortably. When you are interviewing potential tenants, ask them if they have had any credit problems. Most tenants will tell you if they do because they assume that you are going to check. Some new landlords are looking for the perfect tenant. Call other landlords in your town, and you will find some who want a tenant without children or pets, a non-smoking, non-drinker, with a steady job, and good credit. Such tenants may be out there looking for a house, but they are few and far between. Most of my tenants have both kids and pets, and many have some credit problems. I like tenants with all three because they stay longer. They need me more than I need them. With a little training, they can become great tenants. There are many honest, hard-working tenants looking for houses, but they are by no means perfect. Look for tenants who can look you in the eye and answer your direct questions. Watch for body language and how the spouse and kids react. Normal couples will both have questions. Questions are a good sign. Tenants who have no questions and are anxious to sign are desperate for a house. Keep talking to them until you find out why. If you don't like the reason, don't rent to them. Look for signs of stability, such as staying a long time at a job or several years with a previous landlord. Ask them why they are moving. If their reason is that their current landlord won't fix anything, you might wonder why so many things needed fixing. Dig in and ask more questions about what needed fixing and why. A tenant who needs a place tonight is not a good planner. Have them rent a motel for a day or two until you can check them out. If they cannot afford a motel, they cannot afford your house. Perhaps they have to move today because they were evicted. Stable people plan ahead more than one day for a move. 15. Collect a cash deposit or a cashier's check made out to you. In William Nickerson's classic book on real estate investing, How I Turned $1,000 into $1,000,000 in Real Estate in My Spare Time, he advised to never accept anything but cash for a security deposit. Nickerson was a hands-on landlord, and his book is still a good read for investors. Always get your houses in good shape before you rent them, and then always require cash or a cashier's check with a current date drawn on a local bank for the deposit. You can stop payment on a cashier's check. Beware of ones with old dates. If you make the mistake of letting tenants move in and you take a bad check for the rent and deposit, you will have to evict to get them out. That will take you a month or more. Because they did this intentionally and fraudulently, they are unlikely to return your house to you clean and in good condition. Tenants are creative and want you to accept something other than money for the deposit. Tenants with no money will try to talk you into renting them a house. their pitch is that they will take the house in its current deplorable condition, it's actually in good shape, and do all the work it needs instead of paying a deposit or first month's rent. Recognize this technique and don't accept a story in the place of money. 16. Give the keys, a copy of the rental agreement, and an inspection sheet to tenants only after the full deposit and rent have been paid. Do not let tenants begin to move in until they have paid you all that they owe you. 17. Cancel ads and remove the sign. If you have more than one house for rent, callers from one sign can rent the other house. You may decide to leave the sign up until the tenants move in to generate more calls. 18. Note the return, or lack thereof, of the inspection sheet. Always require new tenants to fill out and return to you an inspection sheet that shows the condition of the house the day they moved in. Give them only a few days to return this to you, and explain that if they fail to return it, they are stating that the house is in good condition. If there is something that needs attention, get it fixed as soon as possible. 19. Note the deposit amount and rent amount on a bookkeeping sheet. Circle the deposit in red so that you do not accidentally include it in your income. The security deposit is not taxable income, but can be reported accidentally that way unless you are careful to note it. Learn your state laws that govern how you must handle security deposits. Some states require you to hold them in a separate account. 20. Note the rental amount and due date on your monthly checklist. Have a paper checklist that lists your properties by tenants, rental amount, and due date. Have your rents all come due on the same day of the month. Most use the first because it is easier for tenants to remember. When you rent a house, prorate the first month's rent to have it fall due on the first day of the next month. If the tenants are moving in the last half of the month, collect a full month's rent and then prorate the next month's rent. 21. Have a system to remind you when the agreement expires. Plan to renew and evaluate the monthly rent prior to the expiration date. Selecting the right tenants. After reading the Fair Housing Act, make your rules for selecting tenants comply with the federal rules. As a landlord, you can still have standards. You just need to apply those standards equally to everyone. What is really important to you as a landlord? If you agree with my list, the top three qualities are: 1. You want someone who will pay the rent on time. 2. Will take care of the property. And 3. Will stay forever. You can select your tenants based on both their history of accomplishing these actions and their potential for future performance on these important issues. You can refuse to rent to a tenant who cannot afford your house. Before you begin the process of renting a house, set the rent and deposit amount and tell every person who calls the same information. Not renting to someone who cannot afford your house is not discrimination. It is good business. You simply need to treat all applicants equally. Likewise, if you require that a tenant has a certain level of income to rent your house, write down how much that will be for this house and again treat everyone equally. You can require proof of income, but do it for everyone. Gross income is not the only consideration. The debt or other obligations potential tenants have, such as car or furniture payments, affect their ability to pay. The number of children and other dependents they have or other extraordinary expenses, such as a hospital debt they are obligated to repay, make them a higher risk tenant. Many potential tenants have some credit problems. These problems may be preventing them from buying a house. Some credit problems are a result of a catastrophe, such as a divorce, an automobile accident, or a business failure. If the prospective tenants are recovering and are able to pay their current bills, then they may be good risks as tenants. Most tenants have had some financial problems, or they would not be tenants. You can refuse to rent to tenants who are abusing their current residence because they likely will abuse yours. The way tenants maintain their car is also an indication of how they will maintain your house. Look at their car and, if possible, go inspect the house in which they live. You want to rent to responsible tenants who will maintain your house. You can require them to do this with your agreement, but if they are unwilling or incapable of taking care of your house, you don't want to rent to them. Third, you are looking for tenants with long-term potential. My average tenant stays 5 years or more. If they stay at least 2 years, they have made me a profit. Tenants who move out in a year cost me money. It is expensive to have tenants move out and replace them with another. It may cost you thousands of dollars depending on how long it takes you to find a replacement tenant. Although you never really know how long someone will stay, you can look for signs of potential stability. Ask these questions on your application. How long have you lived in your current residence? How long did you live in your previous residence? What were the addresses? If they can't remember the addresses, they weren't there very long. Ask for the current and previous landlord's names and phone numbers. Often the previous landlord may be a better source of information than a current landlord who may be happy for them to move. Call the previous landlord and ask one simple question. Would you rent to these tenants again? If the landlord says no, ask why. Job stability and the type of job a prospective tenant has are additional clues to potential longevity. If they have a history of job-related transfers, they are a higher-risk tenant. Renting to your first tenant. The first time you rent a house, you are likely to be confused about how to screen and select tenants. When tenants call on your ad, tell them the amount of the rent and the deposit. Some will ask if they can pay over time, and others will tell you that you are charging too much. Neither of these tenants has the money to move into your house. You are better off with an empty house than with a house occupied by tenants who cannot afford to pay the rent. Set standards and stick with them. Ask everyone for proof of income. If a tenant is a salesperson or self-employed, require 2 years' tax returns. Make sure that they are signed copies of the original. Call references and confirm income if the tenant is employed. Just before you conduct your interview, go back and review this chapter and write down your requirements for a tenant for this house. Most new landlords are concerned about how they can turn down tenants they don't want to rent to. Turn them down because of a business reason, not a personal reason. Here are some business reasons you can use to turn down a tenant who does not qualify to rent your house. 1. They will not fill out an application. 2. They will not give you an application fee. 3. They do not have enough money for the first month's rent and the security deposit. 4. They do not make enough money to afford the rent. 5. They do not have a verifiable source of income. 6. They do not have a steady record of employment. 7. They do not have a good history as a tenant. 8. They cannot give you a referral that you can contact. 9. They do not plan to stay as long as you want a tenant to stay. 10. They have a big dog, or several dogs or cats, or any animals you don't like. Animals are not a protected class. 11. They have too many vehicles, or a large truck or motorhome. This is not an all-inclusive list, but it will give you an idea of the types of reasons you can use to turn down a tenant. In summary, you want to rent to a tenant who has a verifiable source of income that is large enough to afford your house. A tenant with long-term potential is preferable to a better-looking tenant who likely will move in 6 months. A tenant who moves in less than 2 years is costing you money. Set your goal to have your average tenant stay at least 3 years, and you will be a happy and successful landlord. Rewarding your good tenants with financial incentives. In my first years of renting houses, another landlord shared a technique that he used to collect rent on time. Rather than charging a late penalty like most landlords, he gave his tenants a discount for paying on or before the first of the month. The amount of the discount was meaningful enough that his tenants paid him first. If they were short that month, they paid someone else late. The concept of giving a good tenant a real discount to pay on time works well. Today, I combine the discount for on-time payment with a discount for not calling for maintenance that month. As a tenant, you have to do both, pay on time, and not call for maintenance to earn your discount. With this approach, tenants may just defer maintenance for months or even years. To use this discount approach safely, you also must collect a substantial security deposit and inspect your homes periodically. Your rental contract should include a clause that says any deferred maintenance that is the responsibility of the tenants will be charged against the security deposit when the tenants move out of the property. The concept of giving a financial incentive works so well with good tenants that you rarely see them. Some of my tenants have been with me for more than 20 years. Really. And during that time, they have paid on time every month. These tenants are making me a lot of money and, just as important, not taking any of my time. Other ways to reward exemplary tenants is for you to agree to pay for improvements or additions to the house that benefit the tenant. Fencing in a yard, screening a porch, adding landscaping, paying for the materials to build a deck or a fence, or simply allowing the tenant to make some modifications to the house, such as wallpaper or a different color paint, bond the tenant to your house. My tenants have recarpeted, painted, replaced, and refinished cabinets and installed decks and patios, all at their own expense. My longest-term tenants moved into a new house I had built 26 years ago and plan on living there for as long as they can. Not every tenant will be a great tenant, but when you get one, take good care of him with reasonable rent raises and prompt responses to normal maintenance problems. Long-term tenants are worth tens of thousands of dollars to you because they keep you from having vacancies and keep your repair bills lower. You will spend most of your money as a landlord when you have tenant turnover. Do what you can to minimize it. Being a successful landlord without working nights or weekends. Many people avoid buying real estate because they fear getting a phone call from a tenant in the middle of the night. I don't take a tenant's call at home. In fact, I insist that my tenants email me with maintenance requests. The email gives me a written record and a chance to contact whoever will make the repair before I respond. When I call or email a tenant and tell her that help is on the way, she is pleased. Early on, I decided to work no more hours than my banker does, and he does not work nights or weekends. You can be a success as a landlord and work no harder or longer than your banker. In the rare event of an actual emergency, furnish your tenants with a list of numbers for emergency contacts. I have had 5 actual emergencies in managing hundreds of tenants. 2 fires, solution, call 911. 2 break-ins, solution, call the police. And a flood caused by a broken pipe, solution, call the plumber. Not everything that a tenant would see as an emergency is an emergency to me. For example, several years ago on Thanksgiving morning, one of my tenants could not get her oven to work. She thought it was an emergency, called my office number, and left a message. Since it was not a true emergency, I did not respond until the following Monday. If I had called her Thanksgiving morning, she would have been upset with me if I could not fix her oven in time for her to cook her turkey. It would have been nearly impossible, and very expensive, to find a repair person who would make a house call on Thanksgiving morning. By the time I called her on the Monday morning after Thanksgiving, she had forgotten why she had called. The moment had passed. The emergency was over, and we could deal with the minor repair rationally, not emotionally. Most emergencies, like a hot water heater not heating, an air conditioner that is not cooling properly, or a drain line that is plugged, are not real emergencies and can be handled during business hours. Real emergencies include fires, storm damage like a tree falling on a roof and creating a leak, a plumbing problem flooding the house, an electrical problem that is dangerous, a break-in where the house cannot be secured, and other problems that may result in injury to tenants or others. You can delegate to tenants the responsibility for clogged drain lines, which they clogged, damaged screens or broken windows, which they damaged or broke, and anything else that they break. You can have them coordinate the repair of almost anything else after you authorize it. A couple of years ago, I came to work on Monday morning, and a neighbor had left a message that the police had raided one of my houses and kicked in the front door. I tried calling the tenant and got no response, so I drove out to see the house. By the time I arrived, the tenant had purchased and installed a new front door to replace the one the police had damaged. It turns out that he had a problem that warranted the police arresting him, but he made bail, fixed the door, and lived there for many months until the judge sent him to jail. Although the tenant was in trouble with the authorities, he valued his home and wanted to continue living in it. I had treated him fairly,